Welcome, Race Radio.
Welcome, race fans. How are you tonight? I want to thank everybody for tuning in to another episode of Racing with Big Sweat. About to bring on your host, Chris DeLaCosta Blake Brayton. I am his co-host, DJ Sports. Before we get him on here, I just want to make sure that I thank Fit for Life, H. Stockdale of It Works, I-95 Sports Network, and Mile High Radio for making all this possible. Without these great marketing partners and networks, we wouldn't be able to do what we do and grow the way we grow. So I got to thank them. Make sure you guys check us out on Twitter, at 110 Nation. Check us out on Facebook, 110 Nation Sports. Also, make sure you guys check out our site, www.110nationsports.com. Wow, you act like this is like the first day of rent in the studio. Muted myself instead of bringing Chris on. But anyway, let me get Chris in the studio. Chris, how you doing tonight?
All right there, Mr. CJ Sports. How the hell are you?
Big shout out to Steve
Billmeyer, boy, if he just doesn't live in this every single episode. I tell you what, I get so excited. You know, I've told you before that Steve and I talked about hyping this thing up a little bit. And man, I sure do miss bringing the guest on. But I tell you what, it's just nice to sit back and have some good talking points about NASCAR and the state of the sport. And I think Steve would be proud in the direction we've gone at this point in time with Racing with Big Sweat. And it's always an honor to be sitting on this side of the captain's seat, Mr. CJ Sports, because, of course, it was unexpected. And you know, we want the legend of Steve Billmeyer to live forever. So kind of bringing up the NASCAR and talking about it, you know, that's Steve where his bread and butter was. And so it's kind of nice to help carry that legend along and just talk some good old racing because, you know, you got a friend when you can talk racing. Ain't that right there, CJ Sports?
Oh, yeah.
Well, the hot topics, man, they're blowing off the charts this week. No big shakeups right now in the silly season, Mr. CJ Sports. We're still waiting to kind of hear about what's going to go on with some of these spots that could be or may not be vacant. I did hear last week that Lowe's and Nationwide were very close to sealing the deal for 2018. And also this week we've heard a nod from Dale Earnhardt, giving his nod to Alex Bowman reference there to take over the 88. So
yeah.
I think a lot of you guys are pretty excited about it, but I was watching William Byron today in qualifying or practice, I should say, for the Xfinity series. And Byron looks like he's not taking as long as I thought to maybe catch up. But we're going to see how that one plays out. And, man, we've argued about that one before. So we'll make sure that we save that one for another show. But we do want to tell you, if you have been away from your Twitter or your Facebook, you may not know, Kevin Harvick is on the pole for the Coca-Cola 600. Is that just another sign of Ford dominance right there, Mr. CJ Sports? Are we going to start hearing the Chevy cans crying about we don't have enough speed? What's your take on that?
Ford has stepped up. To me, this is more of a question on if Stuart Haas stepped up. Penske's ran good all year. Jack Roush, Roush Fenway, has run good all year. The Stuart Haas guys, I mean, they came out and Kurt went to the Daytona 500, and it was like it for Stuart Haas. So to me, it's more of has Stuart Haas finally clicked on something, are they finally up to par with the rest of the Ford teams?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, when Kevin Harvick comes out and says, man, at Talladega, he talked about that horsepower. He understood that Roush Yates racing horsepower. I'm going to get it right here in a minute. I'm staring at a bowl of strawberry ice cream with some caramel on it. I tell you what, it's hard to keep the concentration when you're looking at some goodies like that. So temptation is staring me in the eye right now. But definitely, as we were talking about, CJ, refresh me real quick because I did just have a brain mess up, sir. We were talking about Kevin Harvick on the pole and, of course, the horsepower that Kevin Harvick commented on after Talladega. He kind of understood that Ford horsepower and what it was all about. So Temptation decided to leave the room, and so I shall be able to return back to business. Harvick's on the pole. Stuart Haas is looking good. Ford's looking strong. I really think they're in contention this year for the manufacturing championship, which will be the first time, I think, since Dale Jarrett won the championship. I'm not sure, because I do know that Chevy had a good string there of, like, probably 14 or 15 straight manufacturing championships. So we'll get an update on that one later. Or maybe our colleague, Mr. Mike Pericone, could give us a quick scout on that. But we've got other things to discuss, and, man, it's crazy. Mr. CJ Sports, it's like you're wanting to talk about the Robert Yates induction into the Hall of Fame. And guys, what I want to tell y'all is all five picks can be argued for and against. I think unanimously, Robert Yates was put into the induction at something what I heard around 90-something%. Which is absolutely amazing. It really shows the caliber team that Yates Racing was from the late 80s into the early 2000s. And it was unfortunate to see such a powerhouse, Robert Yates Racing, be a victim of the gap when sponsorship started kind of it was obviously harder times to get a good sponsor to pay $25 million a year for a team. So, you know, that was just unfortunate circumstances. But, of course, you know, Yates Racing lives on, Mr. CJ Sports, because, you know, it's in those Roush Yates horsepower. I was very impressed with, of course, Robert Yates being inducted. You know, the second one that I have to give high props to and honor is of course, somebody who inspired me, somebody who I look up to, and somebody who, when his voice comes on the radio or the voice comes on TV, it just takes you back to the time when you were as a kid watching the Daytona 500 with your old man. And when I'm speaking of that, of course, I'm speaking of the former CBS announcer, Mr. Ken Squire. For Ken Squire to make it into the biggest Hall of Fame in motorsports history really says a lot about the influence that you can have in people's lives and just be a broadcaster. And as a amateur broadcaster or whatever you want to call me. You know, I'm an opinionated journalist, and I know that those two don't really go together. But, you know, I think that there's always a time to evaluate things. It's up to the – as long as we're bringing the truth, then our listeners can make their assumptions for themselves. It's not really our place as journalists to do that. But, you know, there is entertainment to everything, and so, you know, that's how we make radio shows. But Ken Squire – has always been to business. He's been a broadcaster, a commentator, was a part of the 1979 Daytona 500. He's been in everybody's ears for all these years. And to see him in such a high honor, it really shows the appreciation behind the work that Mr. CJ Sports, you do every day, and I do once a week. And really, I carry my job into the other fields as well as being an announcer and a commentator at the racetrack. Our local track. So, you know, that's just a big time thing. I think that, you know, NASCAR should be celebrated for recognizing the influence that Ken Squire has had. The third one, of course, was Ron Hornaday. And, man, you know, that's he made a career out of being in the truck series. And I read an article years ago, and Kevin Harvick was trying to make it over here on the East Coast after being over there on the West Coast. And lo and behold, you know, one of the first places that Harvick landed, along with Jimmy Johnson, was on Ron Hornaday's couch at Lake Norman, at his house in Lake Norman. And, you know, Hornaday's worked with the best. He ran a lot of races for Earnhardt. Of course, he raced for Harvick. Really didn't have much of a Cup career. So, you know, it really was kind of surprising to see Hornaday got the nod this year. And then we got to doing some digging earlier today, and we found out that there was actually a tie between Hornaday and Alan Kulwicki. And so they did a revote, and the revote shifted by three votes, which gave Hornaday the nod. And CJ, I don't want to upset anybody because I'm not trying to be negative about it, but the fan vote wasn't paid attention to. The fans unanimously voted for Alan Kulwicki to have that spot, and in the tie, Hornaday was given the nod on a revote. Tell me if that's – tell me your take on that, because I feel like maybe that's a discouragement to the fans to vote, because in that kind of instance, should the fan have decided Alan Kulwicki, or did NASCAR do the right thing by – and I don't want to put that on your shoulders. If you don't want to answer that question, I understand, but give me something here, CJ, because to me, I felt, you know, it was kind of, you want to encourage people to be involved in the sport. So they gave a great nod with Ken Squire, but what do you think the situation is with that? And you may just be hearing this, so I'm kind of putting you on the spot. Do you have anything to add to that?
This is the first, and I'm trying to understand how a team owner champion does not get in before a truck series specialist, I guess the word I could use. That makes no sense to me. Regardless of the revote and everything else, I'm trying to understand how Alan Kulwicki does not get into the Hall of Fame before Ron Hornaday.
You know, such a good point. CJ, that's what I'm talking about. You know what? That's exactly right. He wasn't only a champion. He was an owner-driver champion. And gosh, man, I mean, how could I have missed that as well? Great point. I think that you stabbed that one right there where I'm at. You know, Red Byron got voted in on the fourth spot. And Mr. CJ Sports, may I say something real quick before I give it back to you? You know, Red Byron's in. We're still missing cat daddies like Curtis Turner and Smokey Unick and quite a few of those other old dogs. Are they ever going to have their day?
Hopefully they do.
I do too, and I think that it's ridiculous that it's taking this long.
I think that the Hall of Fame is not – how long has the Hall of Fame been around? It's not been around extremely long, has it?
Right, it hasn't, but you're kind of putting more emphasis on today's players instead of how the sport was built. So there's
– what the reason I'm asking is, if the Hall of Fame's not been around, it's not like the other sports where there's been a Hall of Fame forever. So I feel that maybe they should be, they should have a time limit where, okay, for the first so many years, we'll have 7 or 8 inductees. And then once we hit year so-and-so, we'll reduce to 5. I feel as many talented drivers that should be part of the Hall of Fame and people that are involved with the sport, like the Ken Squire, that should be in the Hall of Fame, then they're never going to catch up.
Yeah. Basically, what you're saying is there's already coming a time where these walls are limited, and eventually, after all the all the new wears off of it, the older guys will finally get the nod.
I just don't know if NASCAR will ever be able to catch up. With you only having 5 a year, and this sport being around, what, 75, 8 years, whatever we are, you're not going to ever catch up only allowing 5 in a year. I think for so many years, they need to allow like 8 inductees or 10 inductees,
yes,
so you can
maybe
get caught up a little bit.
Right. Or maybe even separately assign, considering what Major League Baseball is doing, to give a vote for those that are caught up in the time gap. In other words, a legendary Hall of Famer, and make sure that every year one of those, maybe as the sixth man, you know what I mean? Call it the sixth man Hall of Fame. So that's a great point there. You know, Red Byron, he had an established career. I really would like to see Tiny Lund and a few of those others remembered as well, because the further away we get from them, the further that doesn't seem like, you know, it seems like the cultural gap that NASCAR's taken over the last 20 years is definitely relevant in the voting of the Hall of Fame. But this is my problem, and I've told myself to not take this too serious, because of course this is talk radio, so I guess we should take it serious. But Ray Evernham. I mean, my argument to Ray Evernham is, how can you compare what Ray Evernham accomplished on the same table that you compared what Robert Yates accomplished. Because obviously they had similar careers. Robert Yates was a lot more successful. Now, in my opinion, I think stats will prove it itself as well. It just kind of seems like Everingham was given a nod for what his drivers were capable of. And at what point in time is NASCAR, you know, was it his services as a crew chief or was it services as a team owner? Obviously, I would fall more into the place that it's probably based off of his connection with Jeff Gordon. The difference in Ray Everingham and Robert Yates, of course, is Robert Yates was able to fill that seat with an established championship caliber driver for many, many, many years. Dale Jarrett, I think, won, what, two championships? Arnie Irvin was running for a championship. Davey Allison lost the championship in 92, was definitely capable of winning the championship in 93, had his life not ended. I just feel that in comparison of these two being on the same ballot sheet, maybe that fifth spot should have went somewhere else. And what I want to think about in all this is not to argue the career that Ray Everingham had. Obviously, he was an influential piece or he would not be in the Hall of Fame. But it goes back to my argument. Man, guys, how in the heck did Davey Allison not get the nod? How in the heck did Alan Kowicki get put off the sheet because of a tie? Guys, I just sat here and watched our show that I've seen too many times already of Davey Allison's 92 season. I heard somebody say the other day, oh, he either wrecked or won, but he was still in the championship every year. And that says a lot. When I read the stats on Davey Allison, he won 9.42% of the time, which is a higher rating than any other drivers. And to put more things in perspective, he won as much in 5 years as what Earnhardt, almost as much as what Earnhardt's done in an 18-year career. Earnhardt Jr., I should say. So that's to put things in perspective of how dominant Davey was. And he was the last of the tough guys. I mean, he was – that 92 season, that boy took a licking. He kept on picking. And I know that that's Uncle Sal. Everybody loves that show. But, you know, I feel that Davey is not getting the recognition that he deserves. And being the impact that he had in sports, obviously, or into racing, obviously NASCAR has put him on the ballot, so there is some recognition there. But how he missed that and how him and Alan both missed it this year, I can only hope that, you know, the stars are not stacked for next year. But I think that, you know, it's going to be even harder if you don't get in your first year, especially on the guys from the older part of NASCAR before the change happened, you know, 15, 16, 20 years ago. Of course, Allison is from, you know, another decade. You know, obviously, he was early 90s, you know, late 80s. And some of these fans that are now in the sports, CJ Sports, are, you know, a lot older than that. So, you know, definitely either they're older than that or they're, you know, they weren't even thought of in 93. My son's a Kyle Busch fan. He was born in 2011. So that just shows the differential gap between the fans of now and where the sport come from 25 years ago. On your Hall of Fame inductions, Mr. CJ Sports, would you like to add anything to that? I know we took a brief time to admire Ken Squire and his accomplishments in the sport. Would you like to add anything to the Hall of Fame inductees?
I mean, you pretty much. Knocked it out of the park. Always love listening to Ken Squire. You talked about that someone did in the bar. The person that I know will be in the Radio Hall of Fame at some point is Paula Calvert. That's who inspires me. What he has done and what he's accomplished is just everything about her. I think that when I saw Ray Abraham's name, I did scratch my head a little bit. I thought that was had a chance. I didn't see the inductee last night. Go back and see what Ray Abraham had accomplished, but I didn't realize it was enough to be Hall of Fame worthy. So something I was going to go back and look at. I mean, obviously, fighting the opportunity of Jeff Ford being the driver when you're on the street team by the house obviously paid dividends. But I was actually going to take the time to go back and look. I didn't realize he had a Hall of Fame worthy career at that time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, definitely. Especially when you're weighing on, you know, the other possible people on the ballot. Yeah, and I think that took us by shock. And look, like I said, I'm not going to put Everingham down. Obviously, there were other writers who felt that he was well accomplished, but it once again, I think, puts a lot of question into the integrity and the true guidelines of what it takes to be in the Hall of Fame. Like I said, you know, Ken Squire, he was put in for broadcasting, so obviously he's been influential. But, guys, what I want to talk about with influential is look at what Kyle Petty's done for the sport. Okay, you want to talk about influential. Kyle Petty wasn't that great of a driver. He was an accomplished driver. Had 5-6 wins, maybe 7, something like that. But after Adam Dodge, he started the Victory Junction game. You know what I mean? Has that not changed the lives of people every day? He has the motorcycle ride. He's been a great broadcaster. Kyle Petty's also had a very established career. He shared his love to the sport. He gave back to it even after the sport took something away from him. I think that was how he handled the pressure of it. So, you know, maybe we're missing somebody there as well.
I'm not going to agree with you on that one.
You're not going to agree with me on
no.
the fact that he did great things for children and was influential to the sport.
Okay, if you want to put him into a charity Hall of Fame, yeah, that's fine. He is only in that announcer's position because his last name. I can't stand to listen to him talk. I mean, he says off the wall stuff that makes no sense just to get attention. When he ain't got no attention and his name's not in the headline for a while, he'll go to running his mouth. What was the last time when he was talking? He got knee deep into talking about Danica Patrick and all the garbage he did. It's not because he had anything better to do. He just missed his name being in the spotlight. His career, he won 8 races or at the most 8 races in the 20 years he ran in the sport. So he on the track, he didn't accomplish enough to be in the Hall of Fame. I'm not going to take his Junction Kid thing away because it's a great cause. And we, even the Circle K, we raise money for the Junction Gang every year. So we're highly involved with that as well. But outside of that, if Kyle Petty would never had been on a racetrack or never sat in a booth ever, I would probably be a much happier person.
See, once again, we don't have a specific guideline, a specific template of what we're supposed to be judging this Hall of Fame on, which just adds just a, you know, it's kind of like, I wonder if this is almost a promotional move to keep everybody talking because obviously NASCAR believes in templates, and they've yet to establish one for the Hall of Fame induction, or at least to get on the ballot. Moving right along, obviously, Kevin Harvick has been around the sport for quite a while. A fun fact on Kevin Harvick was he was a part of the inaugural class of 95, the first year of the I think that was called at that time the Craftsman Truck Series. I did not know that he was he debuted his NASCAR career with the Truck Series the inaugural year of 1995, which of course eventually gave him. Yes. Yeah, and fortunate for that, Mr. CJ Sports, I'm having a hard time hearing you. I hope it's not my phone. Unfortunate for that, he was racing at his home track there in Bakersfield, and that was where the tour took them. And so in his article today, or his rant, I should say, you know, he expressed the fact that, you know, NASCAR really needs to go back to these small track venues. And I caught the Toledo race up, the ARCA race up at Toledo, and Mr. CJ Sports, that was a good race. I tell you what, those cars were competitive. It was awesome to see Natalie Decker and the finish that she had. She was in the top 10 all day long. That was just a great race. ARCA had a really good time up there at Toledo, and the track was fast and short. And I tell you what, it caught me.
You're opening a whole can of worms on this one.
I definitely believe that trucks should be going back to those types of venues. But before we get into that argument, I was told that you'll never get those kind of venues back because the TV rights, they don't want to have to send another crew to these types of venues, so that's why they're all tied together onto the same weekend. They're basically the support shows to the big races in NASCAR. CJ, I'm dying to hear what you got to say for this.
All right, first part, and I ran about this on the show. When you talk about the Toledo track, I am very disappointed in the Arkansas and the Toledo Speedway when what I saw this weekend out of the Arkansas. I got an opportunity
what?
To watch it.
You were disappointed?
This is what I'm disappointed about. There was a point of a race where we watched Thad Martin spin out and collide into styrofoam blocks on the track as their quote-unquote safety barrier. I'm sorry, but if you are the artist here and you're trying to get people to come to your event and to watch it on TV, build this series more and more as they have been, then you should be at quality track. Not tracks we watch them run into styrofoam blocks on the track. I'm sorry, but that to me is not a good look for the ARCA series. I would rather watch them. I was at Myrtle Beach. Myrtle Beach, the best they get is the open modified series race. And I'm scratching my head because this track should be running ARCA series races. It should be possibly have a truck series race. It was a great track. Then I watched on TV, I watched Toledo Speedway, and they got a styrofoam out there as a safer barrier. I'm sorry, but your presentation is everything to me. And if I'm a race fan and I see this, I'm thinking, why do I want to watch the ARCA series? This is a cheap-looking series. I have a serious issue with it.
Oh, wow. Well, welcome to the track owner's side. He needs tickets to sell to have a decent, up-to-par facility.
I understand.
And
but
I agree halfway with you. I think that NASCAR should help these guys have something that can make it a safer racing facility. But at the same time, there should also be a code set down by NASCAR for certain requirements to get these events.
Yeah.
Because what I'm going to tell you right here is yes, exactly. And I think you're going to agree with me. If these guys know that they're going to be able to lure in 10 to 15,000 people inside their gate for a race, for any given race that they do with the NASCAR sanctioned class, I think that they would be willing to go out there and put the improvements that they needed to be a sanctioned NASCAR facility. But you can't blame the track owners for doing whatever it took to keep those drivers safe, because the incident that you're talking about, if you look at that car, it only tore out the back end of it. Those blocks, tacky as hell that they were, didn't matter when it saved that boy from having a hard crash.
I'm glad for the safety part of it, but I'm sorry, but if you're a series, like the ARCA series, part of NASCAR, that you're fourth in line in the NASCAR rank, then I feel that you should be a better quality track. I'm sorry, and Toledo would be a great local track that's not on national TV. No problem with it. But when you have something like the ARCA series that you pump money into, now you have on FS1 on national TV, I'm party that you need to go to track that you have to have at a certain standard to be on national TV. That's just the way I feel. Like I said, presentation's everything to me. Are you going to sell me by bringing out a beat-up Buick? Or are you going to sell me on the brand-new 2017 bottle or whatever you got? I'm sorry, you're going to sell me on that brand-new looking bottle. I'm not saying they got to be top of the line, but there should be a minimum standard on what the tracks look like, especially on national TV. And it blows my mind when you talk about the standalone track and the local track, why NASCAR does not take over the money situation at Rockingham. They don't get the truck back out at Rockingham and even get the Parker Series. That track's got to take care of. They did all the upgrades already. All NASCAR is going to do is take over that daggone track. And you have local tracks like that. Take over North Wilkesboro. Get it back running. And bring some of the historic tracks that are sitting there rotting. Bring those local racetracks, the truck, Parker Series, and the Xfinity Series when they have the same long weekend. And I guarantee you that would help ratings instead of everybody running on the stupid mile-and-a-half track that we get bored with all the time.
Yeah, and I think that you probably said a lot in that breath. but reality check is you go to these local short tracks around this nation and some of the best facilities are hole in the walls. You look at Bowman Gray Stadium. We've used that analogy so many times on this show. You can't get the cup cars on Bowman Gray because they're too big and you would never be able to put 40 cars in a field. But to see the ARCA cars go there, there's no way you can put soft walls on that place. And what these dirt car drivers do every weekend is they go 120 miles an hour. These sprint car drivers go 120, 140 miles an hour down a backstretch. There ain't no such thing as a soft wall. So if you want to make that a standard for short track racing to be beneficial to the big money bucks that NASCAR can bring, I think that that's kind of hypocritical of how you go about doing it. You definitely need the exposure to these short tracks so that you're not ashamed of the styrofoam blocks this year, because when you come back next year, they made enough money to make those styrofoam blocks go away. I'll tell you right now, Mr. CJ Sports, I went to work for a facility in 2014, and it was the first time I'd ever stepped out of my home track to go work for another track. And, you know, the track had a bad name, and there were certain things that were said, you know, that it wasn't state-of-the-art, of course, and this, that, and the other. But, brother, it has produced some of the best racing that you'll ever see. And when you top that hill and you look down there at the facility, you think, man, this thing was left in 1980. But as improvements have been made over the last 3 years with the new owners, man, it looks like a totally different facility. Things take time to build, especially when some of these tracks have been neglected and thriving to pay a decent purse for their local drivers and very rarely get the big bucks from, you know, e-spark plugs or racing fuel, you know, or Hoosier tire or anything like that. So, you know, it's really, they survive and there's certain things that are implemented that are just standard. I believe as well as what you say, there should be a higher standard for these cars to be able to race at a facility. But we also have to give some of these tracks enough time to build up that type of facility after being abandoned for so long and you know, being neglected by lack of attention, lack of sales. You know, there is nothing that looks better on a racetrack than a fresh painted wall. And if I can't get an amen out of that, then I just need to shut up.
Amen. But what I'm saying is, okay, you got some of the ARCA races that are not televised. Okay, Toledo, that could have been that weekend. Where it's not televised, they get the attendance, and they can improve the looks of it. But when you have a race that you already know is going to be nationally televised, I think or not, it's still nationally televised on FS1, then it should be held to a certain standard because, to me, it just looks bad. It looked like they were at some rigged up cheap track that would just thrown together last second when you're the fourth in line, your fourth series in NASCAR, there should be a certain standard. I think think that K&M Pro, maybe that would have been a better fit because the standard's a little bit lower because it's a little lower series. Definitely the truck series on up has no business being there. I just think it's a bad look for the sport. It is nothing against them. I'm sure, and Natalie talked about it was a great track. She loved the fact that that was her first track. It was an easy track to run. And I'm sure it's a great track, and I'm sure they got great fans. But I just feel that if you're going to broadcast your product on national TV, there should be a certain standard. Where I work out at Circle K, being a store manager, there is a certain standard. Regardless that my store is the smallest store in town, probably the smallest store in the state, and it's not had any upgrades. We don't have the slushy machine. We don't have the hot dog. We don't have none of that stuff. But we're still held to a certain standard because it looks bad on the company if not. And that's kind of the same thing. I understand that they don't got all the nice upgrades and it's local track and the money's not there. But national televised race, it should be held to a certain standard because if not, it looks bad.
Well, and I can understand your argument, Mr. CJ Sports. I feel that there is some right in both of our arguments. And, of course, we want to see improvements from these tracks. But back to what we were initially talking about, we both agree that it's beneficial and healthy for the sport to go back to these venues like Bakersfield. You know, it's important for the sport to go back to these venues like Bakersfield and the one in St. Louis and the short track in Indy and Memphis and Nashville. It's important that some series gets an exposure at these tracks, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think we can agree there for sure. Now, the second thing that we got to talk about, or the fourth thing actually on the list, is Kyle Busch spoke on the cost of the truck series. Now, just this week, a terrible announcement happened. Red Horse Racing has closed its doors. And, of course, that put out Brett Moffitt in the number 7 car, and not TJ Majors. What's his name? Oh, gosh, another brain mess-up. Goodness gracious. I didn't write his name down because I forgot about this topic. It's Brett Moffitt, and, what's his name? Come on, from Red Horse Racing. Anyway, I'll find the name here in just a second. It starts with a T. I just, for some reason, my brain isn't computing.
Timothy Peters?
Timothy Peters, thank you so much, sir. Thank you. Thank you. I was thinking TJ Majors, but that's Dale Jr.'s guy in the sky there. So Timothy Peters loses his ride, and so does Brett Moffitt. Red Horse Racing has been around quite a while. Of course, the article was that he had dumped a lot of his own money into racing and felt like he was digging a hole. Now, Kyle Busch's statements about how expensive it is to run these trucks and knowing that Brad Keselowski had felt a pretty decent loss last year in his expansion into the Truck Series program. Where does that leave the state of the Truck Series? And could we be seeing the last of them, or is it just time to rebrand them and remodel the entire series and possibly go back to maybe even running crate engines or something that will definitely cut the cost for these guys on a weekend basis? Because what's definitely going on is the sport is so expensive that the true Truck Series teams can't afford to run, and owners like Rick Hendrick, Jack Roush, they've all gotten smart enough, and JGR, they've all gotten smart enough to stay out of the Truck Series. What's your take on that?
They obviously got to figure something out. I think that Truck Series is a big, important piece to racing. It wasn't something I really cared for at first, but over the years it grew on me, and I think it is a vital stepping block for these young drivers. NASCAR definitely has got to figure a way, one, to expand this sport. I think they need to start thinking more outside the box. Eldora was a great example of them thinking outside the box. I think them a few years ago going to Rockingham, I think them needed to find a way to go back to that historic track, thinking outside the box. I think that they need to come up with a few ideas outside the box to help spark an interest or more of an interest in the Truck Series to help bring more money in. But, yes, I believe that they need to find ways to cut the cost, but it should not be as expensive as it is in the Truck Series. It should be financially feasible in the Truck Series. It should not be such an issue. Them having teams shut down and shut the doors, that should be the first sign that NASCAR, look, we need to look into this, because I understand, you know, if a Sprint Cup team's got to close doors, then it shouldn't happen. But I can understand it's much more expensive to participate in the premier series of your sport. But there's no reason there should be truck teams having to close doors.
I think in order for a series to stay sustainable, they have to stay affordable. And the day and age of the Cup teams funding another minor league team are obviously short and few. Brett Keselowski, Kyle Busch, Kevin Harvick got out of it a few years ago. So, you know, basically after you get after those names, you're kind of running into the smaller teams. So in order to keep the trucks, which I think it's a great thing to have the trucks, it's a great transitional series. And they definitely have their own brand, but, you know, there's a lot of people that thought the XFL was good too, Mr. CJ Sports. And we can clearly laugh about that now, right? I would definitely not compare the Truck Series to the XFL in anything other than, even though what may seem good isn't affordable. And with that being said, I would hate to see the retraction of the trucks because the immediate response wasn't quick enough. I think that we can still have this series. It's definitely been one of the more exciting series over the last few years, I would say. And getting to see the young talent step into these trucks, it really gives that opportunity because, you know, the Xfinity Series is a good mixture of young talent and older guys. I think that when the Truck Series first come along, it was supposed to be the overflow and kind of the, you know, the old man gets out of the car and gets into the truck. Because, you know, they went after Darrell Waltrip and a few others. You know, Mike Skinner was there on up there in age. They kind of, you know, Hornaday made a career out of it. They've kind of always, you know, expected the old guy to kind of support the series and kind of support it, I guess, financially as well. But it hasn't seemed to fall that way. And when the cost is steadily going up for these guys to race, you have to see what's affordable. And I would hate to lose the series because of failure to act when obviously it's desperate times going on right now in the camping world.
As you were talking, I was sitting there thinking, and I don't know if this is a feasible idea, but to help the popularity of the sport, which would bring in sponsorship money, and I think would help offset the cost, and because now your purses would be bigger, so there's more money coming back into these teams and everything else. Would it be wrong for NASCAR, like when you go play NFL, you pretty much go high school football, you don't have to, and then you go to college football, get drafted, go to the NFL, and they kind of have a system to work your way up, just like Major League Baseball. They kind of have a farm system, double A, single A, double A, triple A, on up. Would it be unrealistic or not right if NASCAR implicated a system that you had to go through, at least on the way up to the Cup Series, regardless how you got to it, you at least had to do a season in the Truck Series, the Truck season in the Xfinity Series, before you got to go into the Sprint Cup Series. That way you would have more team owners willing to invest money into it. You would get that opportunity to get these drivers that we already have seen in the K&M Series or the ARCA Series, where we're already becoming fans of them and you know, kind of make them a year into that sport to help bring national spotlight. Because some of these names, if we would have had to watch them in the Truck Series, probably would have been more willing to watch the Truck Series on some of these up-and-coming drivers. You make someone like Logano or Chase Elliott do a whole complete season before they went in the Xfinity Series and so forth. I think you would have had more of a viewership. And I just think of more, if they thought outside the box and more money was, or this, it gave them, I think if there was more time and thought outside the box and more time invested into it, I think that's when you would start seeing the cost-cutting ideas come in. I just think, like you said, it was kind of a sport or a theory that was kind of designed to kind of be the overflow. So I don't think a lot of thought was put into this whole process. And then I think as the popularity didn't raise like they wanted it to, I think slowly but surely they have kind of invested more into it. But I still don't think, I think, like I said, the Eldora thing, honestly, I think that's the best thing that ever happened to the truck. That is one race that you know is going to be a sold-out crowd to come watch in the middle of the week for that much. I think that the Truck Series needs to be something more. They need to do more things like that. Think outside the box. I don't care if they run more Wednesday races, more Thursday races. I think part of their popularity is because they are usually a Friday night race. And a lot of people are just sitting around watching the Truck Series on a Friday night. I think you'll have a better chance of the people sitting around Wednesday night watching the truck race.
Weekday races. I like that idea. Weekday races are really good. But CJ, I want to stop you right there real quick, because what I want to say is, but you know, this is a sponsor driven sport. I think that we're putting too much emphasis these days on sponsors to fund these teams when the auto parts industry is the one milking the cow. They're the ones getting the money out of this. And when someone hands you a check, Mr. CJ Sports, what I have found in life is when somebody hands you a check, Mr. CJ Sports, what do you do with it? You cash it, okay? And so you can't really dictate who puts money where. And definitely, NASCAR, you're never going to be able to get rid of the kid who could buy a ride. Kevin Conway is, the extends – media, the PR guy who somehow or another fell into a NASCAR ride, was probably the biggest joke of the rookie of the year that had been around since the Viagra jokes. So he needed to extend his lap a little bit so that he could make the race. The guy who walked around showing the medicine where it could extend a better life quality for you. So anyway, when a man hands you a check, you definitely cash it. But what we're talking about here, CJ Sports, is a league, a racing league, a sports organization that doesn't pass out money in any similar fashion than what the Cleveland Browns would get. Because when you're dealing with TV money, who's getting the TV money? Is it the car owners? Because if the car owners were getting some of that mega cable money, do you think that they would need some big-name sponsor, or would it not fund itself similar to what the other sports do and even have a luxury tax for those who basically own their franchise? NASCAR's played the middle in this with their medallion, but you know, it was time to hush these guys up. Of course, Michael Kaufman was one of the big pushers on this new driver, you know, organization type, you know, you look at me because we're going to make changes in NASCAR and it's going to be against what NASCAR wants type deal. So I feel that NASCAR kind of gave in. Brian France gave in a little bit and allowed them to start medallions. But, you know, at the same time, where's the TV money going? The TV money is obviously going to one place, and it's not being distributed to the teams. So the teams have to rely on what I would call a handout, sir. Basically, you've got to have somebody paying for that car to race.
Yeah.
And, you know, team owners like Kendrick, they found that they can build motors and sell them to lower series. So they're in the motor business. They're not in the racing business. They're in the motor business. Hendrick builds motors. They have a race team to showcase their motors, but Hendrick is in the business of selling motors and cars. But basically, the Hendrick Motorsports motor is what he's in business to sell. So, you know, he has to debut a car. He has to put a car on the track, of course, with Lowe's on the side of it or Mountain Dew or Napa Auto Parts. But in reality, that car is being a billboard for a company who's invested sponsorship. You've got to get out of expecting a sponsor to provide for a race team if you actually want the racing business to survive on its own. If you're saying, and what we're saying is, you pull sponsorships all out of racing and the sport dies, we've got to become sustainable. We have to become self-sustainable. And in NASCAR, the first thing to become self-sustainable is to make sure that the teams are getting some of that contract, some of that TV money, so that they're not so reliant on outside sponsorship to fund these teams. Guys, when we're losing a team like Red Horse Racing, they competed for championships every year. It's a terrible situation right now in the Truck Series and along with some other series. And NASCAR, a lot like the Roush situation, the writing's on the wall when Roush started going downhill. And the first writing on the wall was all their drivers and all their sponsors were signed up to 1 year, and they had to lure everybody back, everybody. And that put a strain on Roush Racing. But obviously, NASCAR's got to see the paintings on the wall and make some drastic changes. I think that they're not listening to Humphrey. Humphrey's been very vocal for the last year about changes that need to be adjusted or made. And speaking of adjusted and made, we almost forgot about to discuss the scheduling change. Oh, my gosh. Put off the bells. Bing, 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 bing. Mr. CJ Sports, they've changed the schedule. Richmond is now a chase race. We're going road course racing at Charlotte. What do you think about that?
I'm glad they finally put a race or a road course in the chase, something that I've been wanting for years. I felt if your chase or your playoff now dictated your champion, then you needed to have every type of track available in the chase or the playoff. That way you get a true champion. Did I ever visualize them making a road course out of the middle of Charlotte Motor Speedway as many times as I've been there? No, never saw that coming. I think it's interesting that they come out on turn one. They run the regular oval track all the way around till you get out of turn four, then you cut through the infield. So the road course itself is very short. It's interesting to me because it's like half road course, half oval. So it's a very interesting layout, and it's going to be fun to watch. Don't get me wrong, but I'm just glad that they put a road course in the chase. I thought it was going to be one of the ones they already have. I didn't know they was going to create a whole new track for it, but I'm definitely glad that they did that. I don't know if I like the idea of Indy being the last chase race or the last regular season, and Richmond being the first chase race. I like it being a short track. I like seeing the last race of the season. Tensions are high, and it's a short track. So not only is there urgency of getting up front for those who are still trying to get into the playoffs, but because it's a short track, you've got tempers and everything else. And we've seen some interesting races at Richmond because of that. We go back to all the way to where Michael Waltrip Racing and the pit stop that got the 13th entry into the chase of 12 cars back then, Jeff Gordon. So at times, it's been interesting. I don't think that I could ever have said the same thing about the Brickyard. I like the Brickyard, but you're pairing apples and oranges on the last race of the regular season. I would rather have a race that I know that they're going to be beating and banging and fighting their way into the playoffs versus the way that the Brickyard has gone pretty much every year.
Well, you know, I want to give something to that right there, because what I feel like Indianapolis is about to do is it's about to become that mechanical race. It's about to become the Coca-Cola 600, where you've got to have a game plan going in beforehand. I think one way to fix Indianapolis is to give them four segments, just like you have the Coca-Cola 600. What this track is this track wasn't built for stock cars. This track was built for those cars that hug the ground. They get a lot of traction, a lot of movement, a lot of tightness in the steering wheel, but reaction time is efficient there. In stock cars, you're going to be hanging out loose. So what I believe Indianapolis will turn into is, I may sound like DW here, you're going to hear those race car engines wound up, son. So every time that they go to Indianapolis with the last race of the year, with the last race of the regular season, I think you're going to see a mechanical race. Those engines are going to be wound up. You're going to see a lot of blown engines because everybody's going to be ounceing everything they can get out of their motors. And being in September, I think the temperatures are going to be a little bit better as well, which should add some an extra few fans filling the facility. Of course, you know, this weekend is Memorial Day weekend. We got the Coca-Cola 600 on Sunday. We're going to start Sunday off with the Indianapolis 500, the 101st running of the Indianapolis 500. Last year, 240,000 fans were in Indianapolis for the 100-year anniversary of the Indianapolis 500. Such a prestigious weekend for racing. I hope that you're planning on going out and supporting your local dirt tracks. And you make sure that you've checked out the schedule change, as a few of your favorite races may have taken a date move. Daytona 500 is going to be a week earlier this year, so they're going back to the old time for the Daytona 500, which is good, because that means we'll only have 2 weeks now after the Super Bowl before we will be racing the Daytona 500. That means we'll be off one Sunday and back racing again the next Sunday, I do believe. So definitely, if you're a sports fan like me, you know when the Super Bowl comes and goes that Daytona Speed Weeks is right around the corner. It's always an exciting time of year to see those engines fired up for the first time. And I think that that's a good move for NASCAR to move it back to the original running. But that also, what that does is sets an effect up for all the other races that were scheduled. Talladega has been run on May 5th or around May 5th for the last 4 years. But now we'll go back to our original weekend of the last weekend in April to race. So they're looking forward to that. We get a vacation a week early next year. That sounds like a good idea. And so check your schedule. Chicagoland went to a July race. And it's interesting that Las Vegas now has two races. They have a race in the chase, Mr. CJ Sports. I think that's going to add a little bit of excitement there, because Las Vegas does put out some great races. Of course, Phoenix is always considered like the other racetracks, but Phoenix is its own racetrack in itself. And Phoenix has once again gone through another reconfiguring. So it'll be exciting to see what the 2018 chase will have in store for us. But we got to get through 2017 first. But definitely some changes. I believe NASCAR is listening to the fans. I think there comes a point in time where you listen too much to the fans. But in this case, I'm definitely approving of the changes to the chase schedule for the 2018 race season. Guys, it is 9 o'clock. You would think that we had this stuff scripted out. Mr. CJ Sports, other than telling all my listeners that we'll be at Why Not Motorsports Park tomorrow night for the qualifying heat races of the 5,000 to win Southern Crate Late Nationals race. The weekly racing will be for all of the classes on Friday and Saturday night. And guess what? Rodney Ween must have a loose lug nut because he's giving it away for free tomorrow night. Grandstand free admission, fan appreciation night. That's right. No bobbleheads at the racetrack. We're just going to let you in for free, bring your coolers, but buy some drinks and some, you know, some pickles and stuff like that at the concession stands. That's always nice to either buy souvenirs, a track shirt, or something like that on a weekend where you're getting it for free. Hopefully you'll turn around and support the racetrack and buy plenty of food. So, yeah, we're going to give it to you Friday night, and then Saturday night will be money at the gate to get in, so don't think that we're just going to let you in Saturday because you missed Friday night. Okay, guys? So we want to make sure that y'all are supporting your local tracks. Okay, that's the most important thing. Racing has made it to where it is today because of the support that happens every weekend out at these local venues. When you want to see some sad faces, let a track in your town close down. And definitely is like watching Waffle House close on the east side of Atlanta. a lot of sad faces everywhere. But anyway, it's been great to be on the air tonight. Of course, we got to learn a little bit, and we got to talk a little bit. Mr. CJ Sports, I know that you got a heavy schedule up coming up for this weekend. Tell us about some things that are coming up on the nation, the only nation, the 110 Nation.
Highlights with Stats tomorrow night, 8 o'clock, right here on the 110 Nation Sports Radio Network. He's got 17-year-old John Lewis IV, the latest in the blue clan, strapped into a race car who made his debut at the Sportsman's Division at Wall Stadium this past Saturday night. And veteran NASCAR and Riverhead Raceway official Michael Capiolo. Don't forget noon Saturday, happy hour at Garage. And, of course, we'll get things wrapped up here on the 110 Nation Sports Radio Network, 7 o'clock Sunday night. We probably won't have it because the race will be going on during what would be race. But normally Sunday night, 7 o'clock, rubbing is racing. I've got to make sure that I thank Fit for Life, Paige Stockdale of It Works, I-95 Sports Network, and Mile High Radio. Without these great marketing partners and networks, we wouldn't be able to do what we do and grow the way we grow. Make sure you guys check us out on Twitter at 110 Nation. Check us out on Facebook, 110 Nation Sports. And make sure you guys check out our site, www.110nationsports.com, for all the latest going on here at the 110 Nation.
Hey, also, guys, if you listen to the show, give us some feedback. Tell us we're crazy. Argue with us. Tell us that we don't need to be on the radio. Just do anything that you can. If you're listening to the podcast, if you're listening to the live show, let us know that you listen, guys. Make sure that you're following the page and you're sharing it around. I know that we have a unique racing show here. But, you know, Mr. CJ, I'll give it to you, man. We've been doing this together for a while, haven't we, boss?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's real easy to fill our time when you're comfortable with your co-host sitting across from you. And CJ and I, you know, we've been doing this thing for quite a while now, and like I said earlier in the beginning of the show, it's been kind of tough to carry the show without the captain, Mr. C. Bill Meyer, my crew chief. But I think that you know, every time that we bust out one of these shows, he's listening in upstairs and giving us the old nod, attaboy. I really do appreciate everything that the nation, the only nation, the 110 Nation, has provided for the Yellow Caution Flag platform. And, guys, if you're out there and you want to follow our page, Yellow Caution Flag or Flag of Caution on Twitter is where you can find us. Also, look for the Racing with Big Sweat group page. That's where we share the show. And you can always go back and listen in and listen again and listen again. But every time you click that link, we get showed that you're viewing it. And that's what we're here for you guys to listen to us. I want to thank everybody for all that they do at 110, from Miss Lee all the way down to Mike, and of course, everything that you do, Mr. CJ Sports. And we'll be looking forward to seeing y'all again next Thursday night for another episode of Racing the Big Sweat. Y'all good night. I'm going to go have me a beer. No, I'm just kidding. I don't drink.